A lot of organizations say we care about our people, but it's easy to care about something. But caring for someone means you have to get up close. There's a difference between caring about somebody and caring for somebody. And what we know in terms of what are the predictors of trust, what are the predictors of engagement, what are the predictors of motivation, is that it is almost impossible to care about anything if you don't feel cared for. And to really care for something, we have to understand it. To care for a person, we have to deeply understand them. And understanding takes time and attention. There is no shortcut to building trust. There's no shortcut to building engagement. There's no shortcut to cultivating motivation.
What if you could step out of the day-to-day and see your business from a whole new perspective? Welcome to Above the Business, where we empower you to rise above the daily grind and embrace a higher way of business ownership. Get ready to build your business by design. Welcome to another episode of the Above the Business podcast. My name is Bradley Hamdy, your host. On today's episode, we have Zach Mercurio. He has recently published a book, The Power of Mattering, How Leaders Can Create a Culture of Significance. Now, we've talked about culture a tremendous amount on this podcast. And the reason I wanted to be able to have Zach on to talk about this book is because in the ever-changing landscape, especially with small business owners building hybrid teams, some in-person, some remote, we all understand the need to build a performance culture. That's what we refer to it as at Blueprint OS. The question comes, how do we actually do that? How in a small business from 2 to 25 team members, which is still small, how can we make sure that our individual team members feel significant, that they really do understand that they matter? Well, that's what we talk about in this episode. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Zach Mercurio.
Ambition is the first step towards success. It's time to level up your agency. And Coach P Consulting will help you do just that by using the same strategies he used to sell over 700 life insurance policies in 2021 alone. Now, this is not your regular one and done type coaching. You'll get personalized coaching 2 days a week, every week of the month, and you'll get a live look behind the scenes of his team training and an office that's performing at the highest level. There's a reason Coach P Consulting is the fastest growing coaching company for insurance agency owners in the country. Coach P will train your team alongside his own and show you the exact steps they're taking to achieve Chairman Circle, Exotic Travel, and Multi-Line Presence Club, and be one of the few agents to be selected to have a third office. So whether your goal is to be at the top of your local market or amongst the best in the country, this training will give you the strategies and the tactics to get there. For just $250 a month, you'll get high-level coaching each week from someone who is already getting it done at that level, and his strategies work, and it's time to put them to work for you. Sign up at CoachPConsulting.com and get your first full month for free when you mention the Club Capital Leadership Podcast.
Zach, welcome to the Above the Business Podcast.
Thanks, Bradley. It's good to be on.
Excited to be with you. Love to start with background and origin story. I love hearing people's journeys of kind of where they got to where they are. And then we'll obviously get into the topic of the day and in your book, The Power of Mattering. But before we do that, tell people a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are.
Yeah, so I'll do it in three short chapters. You know, chapter one is my first job out of college. I was in advertising sales, and I had every indicator of success to my family or to the outside, right? I made decent money working for a company in Washington, D.C. We were doing digital advertising at the time, which was banner ads on websites, which was the innovative thing. But what would happen is I was in sales. So I would go out and talk to people, real human beings who were building these businesses, building their dreams, really. We worked a lot with small businesses, but I would go back to the office and we'd talk about them as transactions. How can we get more money out of them? How can we upsell them? And we were looking at people as means to an end, not an end in themselves. And what happened is I saw the toll that took on the people in the company I was a part of. They would come in on Monday and talk about what they did last weekend or what they were doing the weekend coming up. And I was astonished at how many people were living for 2/7 of their lives the weekend. And so I had this big realization of what if there was a different way and what is the different way? And I became more interested in how people worked than the actual work. And so I realized you could go study this. So I actually quit that job and I went and started studying the factors that contribute to experiencing meaningfulness in work, to what does it mean to actually have a human-centered perspective in work. And that research has led me from groups of janitors to people cleaning airplanes to manufacturing frontline employees to car washes to large accounting firms to the military. And what we found is that there's one core driver of cultures in which people can see people, as an end in themselves. And that's that people experience mattering. Mm. They know that they and what they're doing is significant. And right now, I spend about 30% of my time, I do research in this place called the Center for Meaning and Purpose on what makes work meaningful. And the rest of my time is I'm out learning from leaders what they do to do this, and then helping to teach that to other people. But it really started with me seeing the absence of it, seeing what happens when you see people as a means to an end and not an end in themselves, and seeing what that does to not only the client, the person, not only the people you work with, but to the whole company. And actually, that company got bought out, folded a year after I left.
Well, I was smiling because my very first job out of college, after I graduated from Auburn, I was selling advertising as well.
Oh, really?
Yellow Page advertising. And I know some people that was, but back then it was still a thing. I mean, it was a 2004, 2005 time frame. And so that was before the iPhone. And so phone books were just a couple of years away from their decline. But in that moment, they were still absolutely the Google where advertising happens. And I'm laughing because you're so right. That's exactly what we talked about. We talk about on Monday what we did on the weekend, and we could not wait until, hey, we're on the other side of Wednesday, and what are we doing this weekend? And so, yes, I absolutely get that. And it was very transactional. There's no question about it. There's a quote when I was preparing for this episode: hurry and care cannot coexist. Explain.
Well, a lot of organizations say we care about our people, but it's easy to care about something. But caring for someone means you have to get up close. There's a difference between caring about somebody and caring for somebody. And what we know in terms of what are the predictors of trust, what are the predictors of engagement, what are the predictors of motivation, is that it is almost impossible to care about anything if you don't feel cared for. And to really care for something, we have to understand it. I mean, whether it's a house plant, like if you're trying to care for a house plant, you have to understand how much water it needs, where it needs to put, how much light it needs. I mean, I've killed a lot of house plants in my career. And it's just the same with people. To care for a person, we have to deeply understand them, and understanding takes time and attention. There is no shortcut. There is no shortcut to building trust. There's no shortcut to building engagement. There's no shortcut to cultivating motivation. If we're hurrying by somebody, if we do not have time for somebody, if we're not using that time and paying attention to somebody, they will most likely not trust you. They will not engage in their work. They will not be motivated. It's very hard for something to matter to somebody who doesn't feel that they matter to you. Think about the last time you trusted somebody who didn't know anything about your life, who didn't check in on the details of your work, who didn't show compassion to you, right? It's very hard. Think about the last time you were motivated to do something when you didn't know how it or you mattered. Very hard, but it's so basic, so common sense that it's often not common practice. So we have to slow down and choose how we show up in each interaction. And I think that's where true lasting engagement in organizations starts.
Before we started to record, I was sharing with you around our listening audience. I mean, the vast majority of people that listen to the podcast are sub 5 million in revenue. And I just use that as a marker to say that they're 2 to 25 team members is probably the vast majority. And I would even go as far as to say I'd even the more majority is in the 10 to 15 range, something like that. Successful companies, profitable, and the work that they do is very meaningful, right? And the impact that they have to that company, to that small business, is huge. Every person you hire in that range matters so much. Yet we often fail, and I want to be the first to raise my hand to this, is I often fail in my consistency of letting people know on my team how much I appreciate them and how much I care for them and how much I value the work that they do. Because I fundamentally believe, by the way, business is a team sport. I just do. Okay. And so if you want to do anything meaningful, you need to do it as a team. So practically speaking, what are the ways? And this is also one last kind of caveat to this. I tend to index for the harder skills, stuff of business, the numbers, the metrics, those sort of things. And I think that that's been a gift. And I've had to learn the skill of more the softer side of business and connecting and how important that is. Zach, what are some of the practical things that we can do as someone who really wants to be a servant leader, really wants to connect with my team, wants to get the most out of my team members for the betterment of their life, but also for the business. Let's be real. We need to make a profit. Mm-hmm. How can we practically do that?
Yeah. The first key point, and you brought it up, is to see these things as hard skills. You know, because since the 60s, we've called them soft skills. But where that originated was there was an army psychologist that was studying high performing army teams, and he couldn't categorize some of the skills that leaders had that actually propelled high performing teams. Things like listening to people, remembering people's names, showing people how they contribute to the bigger vision. And they weren't tactical or operational skills, so he called them soft. And when we see something as soft or simple, we're susceptible to an overconfidence bias. And so we approach it with less rigor. So you're right in your observations of yourself and me of myself is that we tend to be overconfident in our ability to do these things, and which often leads us to approach it in organizations with less rigor. And we tend to leave it up to chance. I'll just hire the right people. I'll just promote the right people in the leadership positions. Being a good person doesn't scale. Intuition doesn't scale in an organization. Practices and skills do. So there are certain skills that we've identified through interviewing thousands of people and asking them, when you feel that you matter to a leader, what are they doing, that we can use to optimize our daily interactions to make sure people feel seen, heard, and valued. And the first is to notice people, to see and hear people. And seeing somebody and knowing somebody is very different than noticing them. You can know your best friend, but not notice that they're suffering. You can know your team very well, and a lot of small businesses do, but not notice that someone's parent is in the hospital and their energy is lagging, right? So a couple of things that you can do is have some process to observe the details of people's lives, note them down, and share back what you observe. For example, I worked with a distribution center manager. She had a team of 26 people. And all the rest of her teams in that distribution center scored really low on engagement scores, except for her team. And so I went to that team and I said, what do you do here? And they all said, it's our supervisor. She just gets us. We do anything for her. So I asked her, I said, what do you do? She pulls out this notebook and she goes, 3 years ago, I realized I was having a difficulty paying attention to all of my people. And she goes, on Friday mornings, I write down each of my team members' names. I write down one thing I heard them talk about, a piece of equipment that wasn't working that we said we'd get fixed, that they were nervous about a meeting, that their kid was starting baseball. And on Monday, this is how I start my week. I look at that list and I schedule a 3-minute check-in with each of them. And I say, hey, I remembered last week that that piece of equipment wasn't working for you. Did we get that fixed?
Wow.
And what she told me is, I think this is so instructive for leaders, is that she said there's magic in being remembered. But she had a process. So have a process to remember the details. Don't leave it up to chance. Ask better questions instead of how are you? Ask people, what is your attention today? What have you been thinking about? Check in on people's energy levels. And that's that first piece. I mean, we've identified three major skill areas: noticing, seeing people, understanding the details of their lives and checking in. Affirming is the second one, which is showing people how what they do and how they make a unique difference. And then showing people how they're needed, making sure that every single person knows how they and their work is indispensable and non-disposable. But I start with that noticing piece because it's hard to do the other two if someone doesn't feel seen and heard by you.
Yeah. Before I want to continue on, I'm curious around this one thing too, around especially the affirming piece. And I'll eventually come back up to the very top around when you mentioned seeing the soft skills as hard skills, because that fundamentally changes everything that I see, because I've been one that says, oh, it's a soft skill, right? So you even give me that definition. I'll come back to that in a minute. I'm curious on the affirming side. How important is it that when we say thank you for your contribution, that we get specific about what it is that they're doing versus generalized, you matter to me, you matter to the organization, versus being able to say that thing you did with that client, the way you made that post, whenever you sent that email that way, that one sentence you put in that email, I'm going to tell you that was fantastic. Give me your thoughts on the level of specificity.
Yeah, I use the word affirm because it's different than appreciation or recognition. Now, appreciation is showing general gratitude for who someone is. You can do that in an employee appreciation day, giving them an award, giving them a free meal. Recognition is showing gratitude for what someone does. It's elevating someone's performance. Think about a bonus or a perk or something like that. But affirmation is showing someone how their uniqueness makes a unique difference. So you hit it right on the head. The Latin root of affirm is affirmare, which is to strengthen or firm up. So when we show people the evidence of their significance specifically, we actually strengthen their belief that they are significant. So a couple of things there is, one, give them the indisputable evidence of their significance. So I worked with a National Park Service manager, and he manages all the facilities maintenance workers for a national park. They're very high performing. And so they wanted me to go see what makes them high performing. And he said, oh, it's just an email I send on Friday. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, I walk the park and I take pictures of projects they worked on. If they repaired a bridge, I would take a picture of visitors walking over the bridge. If there was a shorter line to the bathroom because one of the bathrooms was repaired, I took a picture of that. Then I send them an email Friday morning and I just say, hey, look what you did. It's my look what you did email. And I just attach the photos.
Wow.
That is a skill, because it's the indisputable evidence. It's not, hey, you matter. It's here's exactly how you matter.
All right. Wow.
And so leaders who do this tend to give people indisputable evidence of their significance. I remember, and I opened the book with this because it's a formative story for me. I remember a janitor who told me that she wanted to do anything else in her life but become a janitor. And she was miserable in her first month on the job. And she had a supervisor that brought her into a break room and said, hey, I want you to read the definition of the word custodian here as a person responsible for a building and everyone in it. And I want you to read that out loud to me. And I want you to know that I don't care how you got into this job. The reason why your job exists is to make sure everyone in this building is healthy. And I never want you to forget that. And she said it changed her belief systems about herself. She's been a custodian for 30 years, one of the most sought after custodians, loves her job, right? You can't argue with that dictionary. Great leaders show people the indisputable evidence of their significance. They don't just tell people that they matter. They show them exactly how they matter.
Yeah, stack of proof that they are who you say they are.
Yep. And also the other side of that is they show them how they uniquely make that difference. So instead right. of saying thank you or good job, make sure that you're being very specific about the setting, when and where it happened. Name their behaviors very, very clearly. Like, what were the objective behaviors? But then what's key is to name the unique gifts they used. Mm. And every human being in our businesses bring us four unique gifts. They bring us their strengths, what they love to do and what they're good at. They bring us their purpose, the impact they make on their team. When they're not there, what's the difference on the team? What do you miss, right? That impact. They give us their perspective, how only they see the work, see the world, because only they have lived their lives, and their wisdom. And even the most junior employees have wisdom. Wisdom is what only you can teach me, because only you have lived your life. Name those gifts and then show them the impact that they make. So if you're thanking a team, if you're thanking a group, those two sides of affirmation are important. Reveal their uniqueness, show them the indisputable evidence of the impact their uniqueness makes. You mentioned earlier about consistency. I would add, to do any of this, we need consistency, right? It can't just be a one-off thing. Because right. the problem is that I've seen in organizations is we do symbolic events to recognize people. And a symbolic event in the absence of daily experience will always create dissonance. So what I mean by that, if you give someone a big award or you have a big end of the year party for people, but then they go into work and they feel unseen, unheard by their supervisor every day, that's the actual culture.
Wow. Yeah.
No symbolic action can make up for daily interactions in which someone feels unseen, unheard, and undervalued.
And to be clear, what you're referring to is an annual awards day that you do for your organization or quarterly retreats that you do for connection engagement. You're not saying that those are bad to do, but in the absence of the things that happen yeah. on a daily basis, then it's actually, it could maybe, if I'm hearing this right, it even could create more separation because they feel like it's contrived.
Yes, absolutely. That's why I really, in most organizations, I don't love Employee Appreciation Day, because it's a day, right? And if you have to have a day set aside for employee appreciation, what does it mean for every other day? And so I like the symbol of that. And I love when the symbols and rituals, though, match up with the daily experience, because when someone goes in and their interactions every day in the business are ones in which they feel seen, heard, valued, and needed, even in difficult conversations, performance improvement conversations, and they feel that, they feel cared for. And then they have a symbol at the end of the year that says, hey, we care for you. That's where the magic happens.
Are you an agency owner looking to grow your revenue, increase your bottom line, and better manage your taxes? Club Capital is here to help. Club Capital is the largest accounting and advisory firm for insurance agents in the country, providing monthly accounting, tax strategy, and CFO services. Way more than bookkeeping and your everyday run-of-the-mill tax prep, Club Capital is focused on providing financial and tax advisory services that help you plan and forecast your agency's performance. Their financial dashboards and agency forecasting tools help you better understand your agency's historical performance, create and measure future targets, and see how your agency compares to your peers around the country. Imagine what it would be like to understand the impact to your bottom line when deciding to hire a new employee, or forecast the impact rate changes or commission rates will have on your business. With over $200 million in tracked annual revenue and $140 million in tracked annual expenses, Club Capital has the data and the team to help you make better informed decisions for your agency. They will help you turn that back office stress into the backbone of your agency's success by giving you the tools to take your agency and your leadership to the next level. Visit club.capital today to book a solution overview with one of our business consultants. Club Capital, way more than a CPA firm.
There's a kid on my son's travel basketball team. He's been very difficult for me to connect with, and I found more about his family life and his situation. And the reason I say this is because he has an inherent distrust of people. And inherently, in addition to that, specifically men. And I found out what it was. And while I don't excuse some of the behavior, by the way, he's incredibly talented, like just gifted from the physical abilities and other things, but like in terms of a teammate and culture and just blatant disrespect and a lot of things, like not great. But then you look through and look on the, and you're like, wow, it's just, he doesn't trust anybody. He doesn't trust anybody. It didn't matter. It didn't matter basketball knowledge to him, any of that stuff. He does not trust anybody. And all of this stuff is guards. He puts up walls around himself to kind of protect himself. Anyway, I was thinking about that word trust, made me think about that. But then also, I think, and I could have this wrong, but I think in Lencioni's book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, one of the very first ones, I believe, is he says, it's lack of trust. Is the one of the very first ones. And I think what you're sharing with us, where his book stopped and what you're giving such specific skills and actual things to do is like, well, how do you build the trust? Okay, that makes sense. It's lack of trust, but how do I actually do that and build trust in my organization? Is that fair?
Yeah, and it takes interactional skills. Every five dysfunction of the team, each one of those is the result of people not feeling that they matter or their work matters, if you go back and look at them.
The other four. So we'll just
There's like not being, not knowing how you like add value to the bigger result, not being a good team player, like not knowing how you contribute to the whole. But trust is really important in that kid you mentioned. When we feel insignificant, two behaviors typically follow. We either act in withdrawal, we isolate, we withhold, we put up guards, or we act out in desperation for the attention we never got.
Yeah.
Complaining, blaming, protesting. So I know we're going a little long here, but I want to bring it back to what this really is. And when you were born, the first thing you did was you reached out. You reached out for someone to care for you. To matter is our most primal survival instinct. No one would be listening to this podcast right now if at some point you hadn't mattered enough to someone else to keep you alive. That need to matter is a survival instinct. It never goes away. So it's an abnormal situation for a person to be in when they don't feel that they matter to someone, especially to a parent or an adult. I always say that an abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation is normal human behavior. It's actually from Viktor Frankl, who's a psychiatrist. So it's abnormal for a human not to feel that they matter to others. And so when that doesn't happen, people often act out in quote unquote toxic ways. Many of the most difficult employees that I've worked with in my practice are also the most unseen, unheard, and undervalued employees when you deeply understand them.
Wow.
That's why some people, as they get higher tenure in an organization, when they start feeling like their institutional knowledge is not valued, they start acting out. Right. And people say, oh, like, this person's a quote unquote curmudgeon or difficult.
Yeah.
So one thing that you should do as a result of this podcast is think about some of these behaviors you may be seeing in your organization. Ask yourself, is this an issue of significance? Is this an issue where this person doesn't feel seen or heard, or or they don't feel that their knowledge or expertise or unique way of seeing the world is invited in and invited out. The terminal withdrawal response to feeling insignificant is leaving an organization.
Is this also where the term that I've heard the last maybe 2 years or so is, even before they leave, is the quiet quitting that we're hearing about?
Yeah, quiet quitting is the inevitable withdrawal response to someone who feels insignificant. Again, it's hard for anything to matter to someone who doesn't first believe that they matter. It's very difficult for someone to care until they feel cared for. We often think that people should be valued once they add value. That's how traditionally we've operated in terms of businesses. But the research on human psychology shows the opposite, is that we need to feel valued to add value.
Because you've got to show me, the old school is, you got to show me that you actually add value to this organization. Then I'll let you know that you actually do matter.
But there's two beliefs that contribute to productivity and performance. These have been well studied. You have to believe that you're worthy, that you believe that you belong there. Then you have to believe that you're capable of doing it. The number one predictor of both of those beliefs is verbal reinforcement from others. So when we show people that they're valued, when we see them, when we hear them, when we point out their gifts, when we show them how they make a difference, we're actually developing the two beliefs that are necessary to give them the confidence so they can go add value, innovate, create, produce, perform, which are all the lagging indicators that we say we want.
Wow. I have a question about, and we'll begin to end after this one. What about with remote work? There is so many business owners that for the first time, I mean, look, COVID has accelerated this, but also technology has evolved to allow it more. And a lot of people then are hiring their very first or couple remote team members. And so a lot of people listen to this podcast, they kind of end up in a split organization, people in person that they're with, and also full-time team members that work remotely, even in vastly different parts of the country. And in a lot of ways, it's been incredible to bring in for that organization that, you know, I've got one client that lives in Seattle. And so it's very, very high cost of living there. And so for them to be able to find a team member recently in Texas, it's good for the person in Texas. I mean, it's great, but it's created a challenge because they're trying to figure out, how do we integrate them and make them feel a part of the team? How do we make them feel like that they matter? How do they do that?
One of the things that's important with remote work is we tend to unintentionally use technology for efficiency and not connection. So meetings tend to be shorter in remote work than they would be in person.
That's very true.
But we have to think about what that does with, going back to your first comment, hurry and care can't coexist. Because when we make our contact shorter by using our technology for efficiency, not connection, then the environment that we're creating virtually to connect actually makes caring behavior less possible.
Yeah.
So think about how you can use your technology for connection and not necessarily transaction. So I encourage, if you're working remotely from somebody, you should not use your camera time for updates. That should be an email. Most meetings, quote unquote, could be emails, because most meetings are update fests. They're transactions of information.
Yeah, that's right.
That can be an email. What can't be an email is checking in on how you're doing. What can't be an email is talking about that conflict we had on the ways we're working together and resolving that. What can't be an email is checking in on how you're doing, because I know your parent was in the hospital recently.
Yes.
So remote teams especially have to use the FaceTime on how they're being with one another, not on what they're doing with one another.
Yes.
So I would just stop doing updates, stop doing transactional meetings if you're working with remote work. Don't use that precious time on things that could be emails.
Yeah.
The second thing I would say in remote work is optimize in between moments. So you have to be more intentional about this. But when somebody hops onto a Zoom call and you jump on early, instead of just muting your video and audio and going and checking on email and avoiding the awkwardness, that's an opportunity to check in with that person.
Yeah.
And in fact, those very small moments virtually add up to what people experience in work. The other practice that's very, very powerful is the short 2-minute phone call. As a supervisor, just calling somebody at least once a week, all of your people, calling them.
Yes.
And not to check in on what they're doing.
Oh, just
hey, I wanted to check in on how you're doing. And bonus, if you remembered what we talked about at the beginning of the episode, which is I wrote down this week that you had that meeting coming up. I just wanted to see how that went. I mean, that is where great cultures happen. When people are like, wow, my supervisor, my boss is calling me. And I look at that number and I don't feel fear or anxiety.
Yeah, I was about to say, sometimes they could be like, oh boy, he's calling me or she's calling me. Something
that,
is wrong.
But you know, and I'm going to be a little bit blunt here. That should tell you a lot about what your culture really is.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you call and do that check-in, or if you're on a virtual call, and I know I see Bradley, you know, you're a little bit frustrated in the meeting. What we can do is we can actually avoid the actual conversation easily because the meeting will end. I don't have to see you like we do in person. So yeah. I can just wait till next week.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Don't let, if you're a supervisor, if you're a boss, if you're a CEO, don't let yourself off the hook. What I would do is if I notice that you're frustrated in the meeting, immediately after the meeting, I would call you and say, hey, I noticed you were frustrated. Is that right? Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
So those are some ways. It's not about adding more interactions. It's really not about where or when people work. It's about what they experience while they're working. And our experience happens in these small interactions.
Yeah. And I think one of my biggest takeaways from today, too, is there's maybe at least three references you gave to 2-minute phone call, a 30-second interaction. It does not have to be 2-hour marathon calls. That's one of the biggest things I'm taking away from this. And then the other is that I also, for some reason, subconsciously felt like that I'm only doing a good job if I remember these things, and what you shared so important today is that I can actually have a process. I can have a notebook. I can write these things down. I don't have to rely on just my brain power to remember whatever that thing is, actually having a process. And that shows the intentionality right behind the, and the heart behind it.
Well, we'd never be like, oh, that P&L sheet, you know, I'll just remember that without writing it down.
Yeah, right, right.
Exactly. We'd never do that.
Yes, never do that.
Yet we do that with the very people that make anything on that P&L sheet possible. We do it all the time.
Yeah, awesome.
We leave it up to chance.
Well, let me just affirm you that I have talked about culture on this podcast with a lot of different people, fantastic concepts that we've learned about. This is probably the single most detailed and also very specific, tangible takeaways that I can remember talking about the culture piece of a business that is so vital to be able to match up with the strategy and our programs and our offers and the marketing and all that sort of thing. You've done an excellent job with that. So thank you so much. And if people want to connect with you personally, but also if they want to find out and learn more about the book, pick up the book, where would you point them to?
You can go to powerofmattering.com.
That's fantastic.
And then I'm also on LinkedIn. I have a fun LinkedIn community, most of whom are out there actually leading teams. And so one of the things I love about my work is most of my work, all of the practices you'll see in the books are ones that I saw leaders do. Like I didn't make up like, hey, you should do a noticing notebook. I would never be able to make that up. So I love mining the wisdom of people already leading and mining the best I've seen out there, that then we can elevate those practices and learn. Because so if you may be listening and be like, oh, well, I do this one thing and I think it helps people feel seen. I would love to know about it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
You know,
Zach, it's been awesome having you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bradley.
Wow. That was a fantastic episode with Zach. I picked up so many things. I think I already kind of really mentioned some of my biggest takeaways is that culture is built in these small moments. The intentionality behind it and just simply having a process behind it is so key. Go and pick up his book. Go to thepowerofmattering.com and connect with him on LinkedIn. And if you have something that you've been able to do that has helped people to be able to feel like that they matter in your organization, then shoot him a message on LinkedIn. I'm sure he would love to add that to his body of knowledge in his community. Shout out to our podcast sponsors, Autopilot Recruiting. They can help you to be able to find A players on your team so that you can then make those A players feel valued and feel like they actually matter. Because in a small business, they genuinely do. So go to autopilotrecruiting.com, autopilotrecruiting.com. And I know that Alex would feel this way too, but the building of your culture with the people that you bring on board, it starts in your recruiting system, in your step-by-step process that you have, that entire system. That is when culture is initially shared with your individual team members. And I know Alex would agree with me on that. Autopilotrecruiting.com. I was having a conversation with a small business owner that works with Coach P the other day, and he was just talking about how much value he has actually gotten from not just the financial investment that he's made in that, but more so like the time investment and also what his team has been able to get out of that. And so if you would like to check that out, Coach P will give you an entire month off. Just let him know, hey, I'm tired of hearing Bradley talk about it on the Above the Business podcast, so I'm finally going to actually give this a shot. Go to CoachPConsulting.com, CoachPConsulting.com. And last but not least, one of certainly the hard skills that I talk about a ton is being able to understand your financials, like really, truly, not that you have to be a CFO per se, or that you have to be an accountant, but you have to have an understanding of your numbers. And one of the numbers that you really need to know is some of your financial numbers and some of your financial metrics, not just for tax purposes. Sure, that's good to know too, but more so because you're able to leverage that knowledge and that data interpretation to make better decisions in the business. Do I have the money to hire this person? If I do have the money to hire this person, when am I going to get my return on investment? What about my marketing? How am I compared to the benchmarks in my industry? Club Capital can help take care of all of those questions that you may have and so much more. Go to club.capital. All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Until next time, lead well and go be great.